Ozark Jack Berlin stepped out of the cabin when he heard hoofbeats approaching the camp. His eyebrows raised when only three men rode in with no pack horses. Blue Owl, his right hand wrapped in a blood-soaked bandana, reined to a stop in front of Berlin.
What the hell happened?
We were ambushed before we could get out of town with the supplies.
What about the other man?
Whitney, Weatherby, Bartholomew, and Carter all got hit. He didn't make it.
Damn. You think any of them be able to talk about where we're camped?
No. They were all hit real hard. I don't think any of them will be talking to anybody ever again. At least ways not in this life.
Berlin glanced up at John Ashby and Moses Johnson.
Either of you boys hurt?
They shook their heads.
All right, come on into the cabin. We'll see about getting that hand fixed up.
After Blue Owl's hand was cleansed and bandaged, Berlin poured himself and Blue Owl a glass of whiskey.
We really needed those supplies.
I know, boss. We did all we could, but it was as if they was waiting for us.
I suspect the word has got out to all the towns around this area by now.
Blue Owl nodded his agreement.
Well, there's nothing else we can do. The men gotta eat, and pretty soon we're gonna need more ammunition.
Guess we're gonna have to find some ranches or mines nearby to replenish our stock.
Yeah, after you get some hot food into your gullet and a good night's sleep, why don't you and me take a little ride around the area first thing in the morning, see what we can find.
Sounds good to me.
After a good night's sleep and a hearty breakfast fixed by Sally, Smoke and Cal and Pearly saddled up their horses for the trip into the High Lonesome. As they saddled the animals, Cal looked over at Smoke.
Oh, saddling these broncs reminds me, Smoke. Why don't you look up Joey and see if he'd help us out while we're over near Pueblo?
I thought of that, Cal. But Joey's settled down with a wife and family now. He's been a rancher a long time. And the last word Sally got from his wife said he'd hung up his guns for good. I respect the wishes of a man who wants to change his way of life. And I certainly wouldn't want to be the one to ask him to strap his guns back on after all these years.
Plus, if you ask him to ride with us and something happened to him, Sally would have your ears.
I won't say that thought didn't cross my mind too, Pearly.
Just then, Sally stepped out onto the porch.
I'm counting on you two to make sure this big galoot doesn't get anything vital shot off. You hear me?
Both Cal and Pearly blushed and smiled. Sometimes, even as well as they knew Sally, her plain-spoken ways shocked their Western ideas of women.
Yes, ma'am. I'll make sure you don't take no unnecessary chances.
That'll be the day.
Oh, if you can manage that, Pearly, it'll be the first time in his life Smoke Jensen has ever played it safe.
Fully rested after a good sleep, Ozark Jack Berlin and Blue Owl headed out searching for a nearby ranch or mining camp to raid for food and supplies. As they rode out of the outlaws' camp, Berlin glanced at Blue Owl's right hand.
How's the hand this morning?
It hurts. The fingers are so swollen, I don't think they'll fit in my trigger guard.
Can you still use that scatter gun in your rifle boot?
Yeah. If I need to, I can fire left-handed.
Good, because I'd hate to think you wouldn't be any good to me in a fight.
Don't worry about that. Need be, I'll hold up my end if we get in a fracas.
Berlin nodded and led the way down a snow-covered trail out of the valley of their camp.
You know something, Jack?
What?
I think one of those men who attacked us back in Big Rock was Smoke Jensen.
Smoke Jensen? Gunslick? Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I saw him once in a gunfight over near Tucson. He went up against three men who all slapped leather before he did.
Yeah?
That's right. And not one of the men managed to clear leather before he'd planted them all forked end up.
Why in hell would a man like Smoke Jensen take up arms against you? He wasn't wearing a badge or anything, was he?
No. But he was sure as hell standing there on the boardwalk next to a fancy-looking Jen, and they both drew down on the boys.
That's interesting.
I heard a while back that Jensen hung up his guns and settled in some hick town in the mountains. Maybe he considers Big Rock his home.
Well, if he gets in our way again, his home's gonna be 6 feet under Boot Hill.
There was also this lady involved.
A lady?
Yeah. Right pretty little thing, with long black hair. She stepped out of a doorway with this little bitty old pistol in her hand and blew half of George Carver's head off while he was riding by at full gallop.
That's pretty good shooting for a lady.
Hell, that's damn good shooting for anybody. Man, woman, or child.
Did you take her out?
I was fixing to, when someone shot the gun right out of my hand with an express gun. It's funny, too. She saw me aiming right at her gullet. She never ducked nor flinched at all. Just stood there staring at me with those big eyes.
Probably too scared to move.
Nope. Far as I could tell, this woman wasn't afraid of nothing nor nobody.
Well, Blue Owl, I wouldn't go repeating that story to the men. We don't want them thinking women and children are getting the best of us.
Blue Owl nodded, then pointed up ahead over a small rise in the trail.
Hey, look there, Jack. A ranch.
Berlin reined his horse to a stop on the crest of the hill overlooking a small valley below. Smack in the middle was a large ranch house, corral, barn, and what looked like a smaller bunkhouse off to one side.
Howdy, gents.
Both men whirled in their saddles, hands going to pistol butts. An older man who looked to be in his mid-50s held up his hands.
Whoa, hold on there. Didn't mean to startle you. My name's Jim Morrow, and that's my spread down there.
Howdy, Mr. Morrow. My friend and I were just heading cross country from Pueblo toward Big Rock. We seem to have gotten lost in the snowstorm yesterday.
You certainly are. Big Rock's over in that direction, about 10 miles or so. I don't see no supplies on your mounts. You trying to get to Big Rock without any food along?
Oh, no, sir. Our pack horse slipped his lines and ran off during that storm. Truth of the matter is, we're about starved to death.
Well, come on down. I'll have my wife fix you up some victuals to eat right now, and I'll pack you some to take along. It's doubtful you'll make Big Rock in less than 2 days, as deep as the snow is.
Well, we're much obliged, Mr. Morrow.
While Bess Morrow, Jim's wife, fixed the men some breakfast, Jim took him out to the barn. He opened the door to a large storeroom. Inside were stacks of canned goods, several sides of beef and pork hanging from hooks in the ceiling, and many large sacks of flour, beans, and other sundry dry goods.
Wow. Looks like you got near enough food here to feed an army, Mr. Morrow.
Yeah, you're right, Mr. Jones.
That was the fake name that Berlin had given him.
You see, we're quite a ways from the nearest general store. It's a good 3-day trip to Big Rock by buckboard. Not an easy journey in the winter, so we stock up with all we think we'll need to get through the winter while the weather's still good.
You need this much to feed your hands?
Not during the winter. We let most of the hands go this time of year. There just ain't enough work to keep them on year-round. Spring comes, I go down to Big Rock and hire however many I need for the spring calving in Brandon. Otherwise, there's just me, the missus, and Hank, our foreman.
Berlin nodded while Morrow began to pack an empty burlap sack with enough food to last two men the 2 days it would take to get him to Big Rock. While he was working, Berlin and Blue Owl wandered out of the barn.
You think we ought to take him now?
No, we're going to need several of the men to help us carry off all this stuff. So it'd be better to come back later in force and take what we need then.
Morrow came out of the barn, the gunny sack over his shoulder.
This ought to get you to Big Rock all right. Once you've eaten, you can be on your way.
Smoke and Cal and Pearly swung to the east on their way up the mountain. Smoke wanted to go by Johnny and Bell North's spread on the way and let them know about the outlaws being in the area. As they approached the North Ranch house, Bell came out on the porch, wiping her hands on an apron around her waist.
Howdy, men. Come on in out of the cold and have some coffee.
Is Johnny around, Bell?
Yes, he's out in the barn.
Cal, you and the Pearly go on in. I want to talk to Johnny for a spell.
Johnny North was sitting behind the barn on a bale of hay. Cup of coffee in one hand and a long black cheroot in the other.
Howdy, Smoke. Long time no see.
It has been a while, Johnny. Sally's always after me to invite you and Bell up for a meal, but...
I know. Seems there's always something to do around a ranch that keeps you from visiting your friends.
You missed the Owl Hoot Trail, Johnny?
Not for a minute, Smoke. How about you?
No, same as you, Johnny. A good woman saved me from that life forever.
Ain't that the truth?
The reason I'm here, Johnny, is to warn you.
Warn me? About what?
Smoke went on to tell Johnny about the outlaws' escape, and that they'd been sighted in the mountains just above Big Rock in the North Ranch.
How many we talking about?
Between 20 and 30. They tried to get supplies in Big Rock the other day, and we managed to kill 4 of them. But there's plenty more up in the hills.
So you figure they'll be raiding some ranches looking for supplies and such?
That'd be my guess. I just wanted you and Bell to be on the lookout for anyone you don't know.
Will do, Smoke. I'll get my guns all loaded and board up the windows of the house until they're caught, or move on.
You think you and Belle will be safe out here by yourselves? You're welcome to head over to the Sugarloaf and stay with Sally. I've kept most of my hands on, so there'll be some extra guns in case they're needed.
No thanks, Smoke. Belle is right handy with a Winchester, and I haven't lost all of my abilities. We'll do just fine now that you warned us to be on the lookout for strangers.
Anybody else you can think of needs warning?
Hell yeah. You might swing on by the Morrow place. Jim and Bess only keep one hand on during the winter, and their place is a mite closer to the mountain than mine.
Their place is over by Slaughter Creek, isn't it?
Yeah, in that little valley just before you start up the steep slope to the peak over yonder.
As soon as you finish that wolf turd you're smoking, come on in the house. Belle's making some fresh coffee.
Johnny stubbed the cigar out on his boot heel, then put it in his shirt pocket.
I'll just save it for later.
Time's getting that tough. You gotta save your old cigar stubs, Johnny.
No, but come winter, with all the snow and storms and such, being married to a woman who won't let you smoke in the house, it's kinda tough. After a while, a man gets cabin fever stuck in the house. Sometimes you just need a good excuse to get away from one another for a while. Otherwise, you get to griping and fighting. Well, and life gets hard.
I can't imagine you and Belle fighting.
Oh, I ain't saying it's Belle's fault, Smoke. A finer woman never lived. But even after all these years as a rancher, I'm still an ornery old cuss. And sometimes the meanness just comes out if I'm cooped up too long.
I know, Johnny. After all the years we spent on the Owlhoot Trail, sometimes you get to feeling trapped when you stay in one place too long.
That's it exactly, Smoke.
When Ozark Jack Berlin and Blue Owl arrived back at the camp, the men wanted to know what they'd found.
An old codger and his wife have a ranch about 5 or 6 miles off to the east.
They got enough food to last us the rest of the winter stashed in their barn up there.
Moses Johnson grinned and rubbed his stomach.
That's good, boss, because we've been on such short rations lately, my stomach thinks my throat's been cut.
Well, we'll have plenty to eat after tomorrow.
Why not go and get it now?
Berlin glanced at the sky, where dark clouds roiled over the peaks to the north.
Because it's going to be dark soon, and it looks like there's another storm on the way. I wouldn't want you men to get lost if a blizzard hits.
Jesus Santiago flapped his arms around his chest.
Me, I'm getting very tired of this cold.
Well, I tell you what, Jesus, if you're tired of the weather, we can send you back to Utah. I'm sure the warden still has your old cell kept nice and warm for you.
That's all right, Senor Berlin. I believe I can stand the cold for a little while longer.
Then quit your griping. By tomorrow, we'll have all the food and whiskey we can drink, and by this time next year, we'll have enough gold to take us clear to Mexico, where you'll never have to see snow again.
That will be a good day indeed.
The next morning, Berlin called all the gang together.
Since Sam Cook ain't around and probably got killed, I want Dan Gilbert to take over as squad leader.
No problem, boss.
Now, I want some of you to head on over to that ranch and get us those supplies.
Berlin was glancing at the sky. The threatened storm of the night before had never materialized, though the north wind was raw and cold.
I figure you'll have just enough time to get there, load up the goods, and get back before dark.
Who do you want to go?
Dan. This would be a good chance for you to show you're ready to lead. Why don't you choose 4 men for your squad and take them along? Along with Blue Owl to show you the way.
Sure, boss.
You think 6 men will be enough, Blue Owl?
Sure. We're only going up against 2 old men and a woman.
Yeah, you thought the trip to Big Rock was going to be easy, too. And look what that happened.
That was different, boss. They was expecting us. That old rancher don't know nothing about us. So that'd be as easy as shooting fish in a barrel.
Smoke, Cal, and Pearly were riding cross-country through snow almost up to their mounts' chests.
That was a damn good idea of yours, Smoke, putting burlap around the horses' legs so they wouldn't get too cold in this snow.
Just another trick I learned from Preacher.
He learned you about using his boot black under our eyes, too?
Cal was referring to the smears of black boot polish Smoke had put on their cheeks just under their eyes.
Yes. It helps to ward off snow blindness from the glare of the sun off the snow.
Sure feels foolish, though.
Better to feel foolish than to go blind out in the open. I've seen pilgrims who didn't know what they were doing wander around blind as bats until they froze to death in their saddles.
Pearly pointed out a rise in front of them.
If Johnny was right about the Morrow's place, it ought to be just over that next hill.
Damn! I hope we're not too late.
The 3 men spurred their horses forward until they crested the hill in front of them. Almost 1,000 yards below, they could see a group of men sitting on their horses in front of the Morrow Ranch house. Smoke jumped down off his horse and pulled his Sharps 50 caliber rifle out of his saddle boot in one swift motion. Pearly grabbed his binoculars out of his saddlebag and put them to his eyes.
Looks like they got the drop on the Morrow, Smoke.
Pearly could see 5 men with guns drawn, covering a man and a woman on the porch who stood with their hands in the air. Lying flat on his face on the porch was another man who looked like he'd been shot. Smoke eared back the hammer on the Sharps and flopped down on his stomach in the snow and took careful aim. While he was doing that, Cal and Pearly, who'd remained in their saddles, pulled Winchester rifles out of their saddle boots and jacked shells into the chambers.
I'm going to take out the lead man. As soon as I fire, you two hightail it down toward the ranch house. I'll be able to get another one or two before you get in range. As soon as you start firing, I'll get up on Joker and join you.
You think you can get to him before they kill the Morrows?
I don't know, but it's the only chance. So here goes.
Cal and Pearly leaned over their saddle horns and kicked their mounts forward. With Smoke shot, the man in front of the group was knocked off his horse as if he'd been hit by a cannonball, arms flailing, hat flying. The other men on horseback looked wildly around to see where the shot had come from, as Smoke, without waiting, jacked another shell into the Sharps and took aim again. Smoke's second shot was low, missing the man he aimed at but hitting his horse in the chest. Taking advantage of the distraction, the Morrows quickly moved into their house. By then, Cal and Pearly were in range. Two more men were hit, flying off their mounts to lie dying in the snow. In the barn, Blue Owl was busily loading sacks of supplies and sides of beef on the back of a pack horse.
God damn it, what now?
Blue Owl ran to the door of the barn and saw 3 of his men down, the others trying to stay in their saddles as their mounts crow-hopped and jumped around, frightened by the gunfire.
Shoo!
Blue Owl ran back into the barn and jumped into his saddle. He grabbed the dally rope of the pack horse and galloped off toward the mountain, trying to keep the barn between him and the attackers as he raced for their camp. Smoke swung on to Joker's back, stuffing the Sharps into his saddle boot as he urged the big stud down the hill. The lone remaining outlaw on horseback leaned over his saddle horn and made tracks away from the cabin, while the man on the downed horse struggled to his feet and began to fire his pistol at Cal and Pearly as they rode toward him. Suddenly, Bess Morrow stepped out onto the porch, a long-barreled shotgun cradled in her arms. By the time Smoke got to the house, it was all over. 5 men lay dead or dying in the snow in front of the ranch house. He looked up in time to see a distant figure, trailing a pack horse, disappear into the pine trees on the mountain slope north of the house.
You want me to go after him, Smoke?
No, he's got too big a lead, Cal. Besides, we can use his tracks to lead us to the gang's hideout.
After Dan Gilbert and Blue Owl took their men and left the camp to go and get Jim Morrow's supplies, Ozark Jack Berlin joined his men around the campfire for some coffee mixed with whiskey to ward off the chill. Berlin glanced around the group sitting or standing near the fire. There were 14, counting himself, left in camp.
Damn.
The loss of Sam Cook and his men and the 4 Blue Owl lost in Big Rock was whittling down his gang from more than 30 to less than 20. He smiled to himself grimly.
This keeps up, we won't need near so much grub to get through the winter. And the gold we steal go a lot further.
Wiley Gottlieb walked over to stand next to Berlin.
Jack.
Yeah?
Men are getting kind of restless just sitting around here trying to keep their fingers from freezing off. Would say we make a little run around the area today to see if we can find something to do.
Something to do? You mean somebody to rob and kill?
The men need a little excitement, Jack. Otherwise, for too long, they're going to be at each other's throats.
Berlin thought about it for a few minutes. Gottlieb was right. These were not the sort of men to stay idle too long before their natural aggressiveness began to cause trouble in the camp.
You're right, Wiley. Tell the men to saddle up. We're going hunting.
3 hours later, after following winding mountain trails that cut back and forth across the side of the mountain, Berlin raised his hand to bring his band to a halt. Down the trail in front of them were three small cabins made of logs and chalked with mud in the chinks between the logs. The cabins were by the side of a small bubbling stream that ran down the side of the mountain. About a quarter mile up the slope, a hole could be seen cut in the rock of the mountain with some wooden steps arranged on the steepest part of the slope. Berlin pointed at the cabins, then at the hole in the rock.
Looks like we found us a mine, boys. Let's hope these miners have had a good run of luck this year, because their luck is going to take a sudden turn for the worse. Get down off your mounts and spread out. We'll go in on foot. These miners have been known to not take kindly to somebody taking their gold.
Berlin took a Henry rifle from his saddle boot and levered a shell into the chamber. Then, crouching, began to walk down the trail toward the cabins. Behind him, his men spread out and filtered into the piney woods on either side of the trail, guns drawn, grinning at the prospect of both action and gold. When Berlin was 50 yards away from the first cabin, a door opened and a man with a bushy black beard walked out and moved toward the stream, a coffee pot in his hands. He was dressed in the canvas pants favored by miners who spent a lot of time on their knees. And when he got to the stream, he squatted next to the water. As he bent over and began to fill the coffee pot, Tony Cassidy stepped from behind a pine tree. Four more men ran from the cabins and three came out of the mine on the mountainside. As the smoke, which hung in the air like ground fog, began to clear, Berlin reloaded his Henry and walked toward the cabins.
Get their guns and ammunition, men. Then we'll check out the cabins to see where they hid their gold.
An hour later, Berlin and his men stepped from the cabins. They found 6 pounds of gold dust and nuggets hidden behind the bunk beds in the houses. Another 10 ounces was still in the mine where it had just been dug up. Berlin bounced a canvas sack of dust in his hand, grinning.
Woo, not a bad morning's work, huh, boys?
As he looked, he noticed a figure sitting on a horse on top of a ridge above the mine, several hundred yards away. Berlin quickly shielded his eyes and glared up the slope at the man. The man appeared to be dressed in buckskins and was sitting on a paint pony, a long rifle cradled in his arms. He had some sort of fur hat on his head, and he was glaring down at the outlaws.
Hey, you!
As the outlaw gang all turned to look, the man shook his head and slowly rode out of sight without looking back.
What the hell? You think that was a spook, boss?
Nah, Moses is probably an old mountain man. I've heard there's still some of them up in these parts.
You think we ought to go after them?
Nah, Billy, from what I hear, those old coots tend to mind their own business. It's a wonder we even seen him.
If we saw him, Jack, it is because he wanted us to see him. My people say the mountain men can become invisible if they wish.
What, Spotted Dog?
It is true. I've been in camp with my people when a mountain man walked right past our fires without anyone seeing him. We only knew he'd been there by his tracks the next morning.
Oh, that's bull, Dog. He's just an old man who's outlived his usefulness. He won't give us any trouble.
I hope not, Jack. The sort of trouble a mountain man gives you is usually fatal.
Come on, boys, let's get on back to camp with our gold. Blue Owl and the others ought to be there soon so we can put on a feed bag and have ourselves a little party tonight.
After spending the night at the Morrow's place, Smoke and the boys were back on the trail. They were well within the thick pine and maple forest of the mountains now.
I guess it's about time we took our nooning.
I thought you'd never say that. That chicken that Miss Morrow fixed us is going to be great. Been calling me for the past 5 miles.
Smoke ground reined the horses and walked over into a small copse of maple trees where the branches had kept the snowfall to a minimum.
Gather up some wood for the fire, Pearly. No need to eat a cold lunch when we've got plenty of time.
After the fire was going, Smoke put on some coffee to boil.
If the smell of that coffee doesn't bring you into camp, nothing will, Beartooth.
Beartooth? Is he out there?
He's been dogging our trail for the past 2 hours. Didn't you notice?
No, sir. I didn't see nothing.
I guess we weren't supposed to, Cal. Like Smoke always said, the only time you'll see a mountain man is when he wants you to see him.
You sure you put enough coffee in that mix, young'un?
I know. Good coffee don't take near as much water as you think it do.
A tall, hulking man, well over 6 feet tall, walked into the clearing, leading a smallish pinto pony by its reins. He was dressed in buckskins, and he was wearing a bearskin coat that gave off an odor for sure, as if he hadn't been too particular about curing it before fashioning it into a coat. He wore a coonskin hat and was cradling a Sharp's Big 50 in his right arm. His face was covered with a matted, tangled, scraggly black beard, with quite a bit more gray in it than the last time they'd seen him.
How do, boys? I see Smoke's taught you enough to keep you alive these past few years.
Hi, Beartooth.
God damn it, Buck.
Beartooth jerked on the reins until the pony moved up closer to the camp.
Though you never gave a name to your horses, because you might have to eat them someday.
Yeah, I changed my mind after our last meeting. Once you told me Puma Buck had crossed the last mountain, I named this misbegotten beast after him, because he's just as ornery and mean and stubborn as old Puma was.
Sit and have some cafecito.
Well, I don't mind even I do, Smoke. I've been living on acorn nut coffee for the past 6 months. This is right special.
Why don't you go into Pueblo or Big Rock and get some of the real thing?
There are too many damn pilgrims for my taste. If and I did that, they'd probably expect me to bathe first, and I ain't due for my annual bathing for another 6 months.
How's the trapping this year?
Well, not near as many as last year or the year before. And miners run them all off with their digging and blasting and such.
While Cal stirred the beans and moved the biscuits off the fire, Pearlie unwrapped a sack of chicken and began to hand pieces out to everyone.
My God almighty, fried chicken!
Enjoy. There's plenty for everyone.
The men dug into their meal.
Have you heard from or seen Muskrat Calhoun lately?
Yeah, he was up this way last year for our annual mountain man gathering at Pagosa Springs. He told us about all the fun you boys had over at Jackson Hole. Said he hadn't enjoyed himself so much since that winter he had a squaw sheriff's camp with him.
You doing all right?
Oh, all right, I guess. The rheumatiz is starting to freeze up his joints and mine, but that happens to all of us living up here in the high country sooner or later. The old beavers missed you at this year's gathering, Smoke. You ain't forgot your roots, have you?
Nope, I was down in Texas, getting some beeves and horses for my ranch. Got involved in a little fracas down there, and it took me longer to get home than I thought.
Texas, huh? Eh, never cared much for Texas, or Texans neither, for that matter. Places too damn flat for my taste. So, what brings you up to the high country this time, young'un?
Smoke told him of the escape of the outlaws and how they were riding roughshod over the ranches and towns of the area. When he told him about what they'd done to the woman on the train, the old mountain man scowled.
Well, I ain't got much use for women folk generally. Man does that ought to be turned into a steer.
Have you seen any sign of the outlaws, Beartooth?
Ever seen them? Of course I have, young beaver. Beartooth sees everything that happens up here.
Where'd you see him last?
Saw him yesterday. They attacked a mining camp about 4 miles from here, killed 7 men and took all their gold. It took me most of the night to get the bodies all under the ground. I don't have no love for miners, but a man's entitled to a decent burying nevertheless.
You know where the outlaws are camped?
Sure. They camped out over at the Hot Springs.
The Hot Springs? But I'd kind of thought they'd be someplace where there were some cabins. Nothing over the springs except those old caves.
It's been too long since you've been up here to visit, Smoke. Some miners built themselves some cabins up at the springs 2 years ago. When the mine played out, they left them to rot.
As I recall, the springs are in a little natural valley between 2 sheer cliffs that rise to about 200 feet.
Nothing wrong with your memory, Smoke.
That's perfect, boys. And the springs are less than a day's ride from here.
You men planning on going after these coyotes?
They attacked the Morrow place yesterday, Beartooth. Wounded Jim Morrow.
They wounded old Jim. How about Bess? They didn't mess with her none, did they?
No. We got there in time to stop them before they were able to finish what they started.
Yeah, the Morrows are good people. A couple years ago, I had me a hell of a toothache. Bess, Miss Morrow, yanked it out with a pair of fence pliers. Then made me take some of their supplies to get me through winter.
They're special people, all right. That's why I'm going to rid the mountain of those pond scum, before they can hurt anyone else up here.
There's a passel of them, Smoke. More than 15 or so. You want some help?
I'd be obliged, Beartooth. A man can always use another sharps in a fracas like this.
Yeah, I don't normally get involved in Flatlander's troubles, but like you say, this is my mountain and I'm right particular who gets to stay up here. I figure the neighborhood can use a little cleaning up.
Have another piece, Beartooth.
Oh, don't mind if I do, youngin'.
And maybe while we're riding with you, you can teach these young beavers something about living in the mountains.
You mean like Preacher did you?
I figure they need to learn from the best.
Then that'd be me.
Ozark Jack Berlin was in the main cabin at the Hot Springs camp, counting out and weighing the gold they'd stolen from the miners.
Boys, we're gonna live like kings in Mexico on this loot.
Jack McGraw was standing near the window to the cabin.
Uh-oh, boss. You ain't gonna like this.
What is it, Jack? I'm busy counting our money here.
Looks like Blue Owl's back, and he's all by himself.
What?
Berlin jumped to his feet and hurried out the door.
Where the hell are the rest of the boys?
Blue Owl swung down out of the saddle and handed the reins of the pack horse carrying the supplies from the Morrow Ranch to Billy Bartlett, a small fire burning.
I suspect they're coyote food by now.
What the hell happened? You and five men couldn't handle a couple of old farts and a woman?
I need a drink.
Blue Owl walked over to the campfire and poured some coffee into a mug, in which he added a generous supply of whiskey from a bottle in his vest pocket.
God damn it, you tell me what happened.
We was doing all right. Had the old man and his wife covered. When all of a sudden, out of the blue, somebody started shooting the men right out of their saddles.
Who? There wasn't but three of them at the ranch.
Don't know for certain, but it sure looked like that gunslick Smoke Jensen to me.
You let one man shoot up the lot of you?
Not one man. He had two other gents with him, and they was right handy with their rifles. Jensen must have been 600 yards or more away when he shot the first two. Then those other boys rode down on his hellbent for leather, shooting as they rode. They took out the rest.
How'd you manage to get away during all this?
I was back in the barn, loading up the pack animal with the supplies we went there for. When I saw the boys dropping like flies, I lit out and never looked back.
And they didn't come after you?
They were too busy with the Morrows, I guess.
And all the others were killed?
They sure looked dead to me. Unless you can live with a hole in your chest and your head blown off.
Well, at least you got the supplies.
Yeah, but it cost us five men to do it.
Of course, that means the gold we got will go further.
What gold?
Come on in the cabin and rest up while I tell you about it.
Jack, maybe we ought to post some guards around the camp. Just in case those shooters decided to follow Blue Owl here.
That's a good idea, Wiley. Why don't you take care of it while I show Blue Owl our gold?
Smoke and Cal and Pearly followed Beartooth in single file up the side of the mountain, taking trails that were almost invisible to the naked eye. Trails that only a man who lived on the mountains would know anything about.
I'm gonna take you up the back way to the springs. That way, if they're smart enough to post lookouts, they won't see us coming.
There's no need to hurry. I don't plan to do anything until after dark, anyway.
Well, the moon won't set till midnight or so, and it appears there's another storm on the way.
Cal and Pearly looked up, and seeing no clouds in the sky, they looked at Smoke.
Well, how does he know that? I don't see no storm clouds.
You can smell it. So can I. When snow's on the way, the air has a different smell to it. Kind of damp and stingy to the nose.
I don't smell nothing.
You spend enough time up here, you will.
Just after sunset, Beartooth reined in his pony.
Whoa, Buck. This looks like a good enough place to make camp.
How much farther?
Well, not too far, little beaver. But we want to camp on this side of the slope so as we can make a fire without being seen by those men. Well, that is, unless you want to make a cold camp.
No, sir, I'm about frozen clear through. I need some hot coffee.
Don't call me sir nor mister, youngin. Name's Beartooth, or just Bear?
Yes, sir. All right, Bear.
Cal hurried off his horse and began to gather wood for the fire. Beartooth grinned and winked at Smoke.
They know about not getting no green wood?
Yes. They've learned that much, at least.
Good. Now I'll show them to build a fire between some rocks so the smoke don't go straight up and signal our enemies where we are.
Well, you do that, and I'll get the grub ready.
Soon, Beartooth had a fire going up next to several boulders where the smoke was funneled in several different locations and couldn't be seen from more than a dozen yards away.
Now, youngins, as far as making good coffee goes, if it's not thick enough to float a horseshoe, it's too damn weak.
Hell, we won't need cups for that. We can just spoon it out of the pot.
Smoke flipped something to Beartooth.
Here, Beartooth.
What's that, Smoke?
I saved some eggshells from this morning's breakfast.
You put them in the pot to settle the grounds, boy. What are you, a pilgrim?
Well, Miss Sally says cold water does just as good.
Yeah, but that water's down the brew, boys. And up here, you need coffee strong enough to keep the winter chill off.
You have any secrets for beans?
Only that you can't cook them too long. That and a couple pieces of fat back helps give them a right nice flavor.
All right.
We're gonna have you boys eating like mountain men before this trip is over, ain't we, Smoke?
If we do that, it'll spoil them for any other food.
After they finished supper, the men sat around the fire. Cal and Pearlie and Smoke made cigarettes while Beartooth enjoyed one of the cigars Smoke had brought him.
Do you remember the springs well enough to draw us a map of the area?
Sure do. It's a circular valley surrounded on three sides by sheer cliffs going straight up. There's an opening on the south where the trail enters it, and a smaller one on the north where the stream enters that feeds the springs.
Beartooth drew a map in the snow.
Right here's the three cabins the miners built.
What about the caves?
Beartooth nodded and made two more marks next to the cliffs.
They're right here, but I don't know nothing about them, how deep they is and such.
Didn't you ever use the caves as shelter?
Never cared much for caves. If I can't see the stars, I get to feeling trapped and hemmed in. Well, except for the winter of 66, I believe it was.
What happened then?
Oh, 'twas the coldest winter I recollect. It was so cold, when you took a piss, you had to break it off because it froze before it hit the ground. Yeah, that winter I decided to take refuge in a cave over on the north side of the mountain. Trouble is, old Bear had the same idea.
You have to kill it?
Hell no. It was so cold we was both glad of the company. I just snuggled on down to that old critter, and he wrapped his arms around me like an old squaw, and, well, we just slept the winter through.
Gosh. Don't bears stink something awful?
Well, I must say he was might gamey, but tell you the truth, little beaver, I didn't think he'd take too kindly to me suggesting he take a bath. So, well, we just put up with the smell best we could.
Beartooth, I haven't heard such a tall tale since Puma Buck was alive.
You mean you don't believe me?
Is that the same year Puma talked about? When it was so cold, you had to thaw your words out in a skillet so yous could hear what the other men were saying?
No, now that sounds like something Puma would have said. That man never told the truth a day in his life. But it was the year I had a campfire freeze on me one night. Woo! Damn thing didn't start burning again till the next day when the sun come up and the temperature rose to 50 below.
And on that note, I think we'll get some shut-eye. We gotta get up around midnight and ride over and take a look at the springs when the moon goes down.
How are you gonna wake up when it's time?
You mean you ain't learned to wake up whenever you want?
Oh, no, sir. I mean, no bear.
Well, you just set your mind to a time and pretty soon you just naturally get up when you're supposed to.
Is that the truth, Smoke?
Maybe for Beartooth. But as for me, I'm gonna set this pocket watch Sally gave me. It'll ring a bell when midnight comes.
Oh,
Cal, I swear you're dumber than a rock.
Now, you just wait and see, boys. When that little trinket of smoke goes off, I'll be up and waiting for you.
In spite of what he'd told Cal, Smoke woke up just before midnight before the tiny alarm in his pocket watch had a chance to go off. Like most mountain men, he came fully awake in seconds. One minute, he was sound asleep. The next, his eyes were open and checking his surroundings for danger before his body moved at all. He turned his head and saw Beartooth squatted next to a small, hat-sized fire among the boulders next to their camp. He had a pot of coffee warming on the coals of the fire, which was giving off no smoke whatsoever.
Morning, Smoke. Time to wake up the youngins.
Smoke fished a couple of pine cones out of the snow and pitched them onto the sleeping bodies. Both men instinctively went for their guns.
Easy, boys. Breakfast time.
Them's music to my ears, Bear.
Pearly glanced around at the fire.
Well, I don't see no breakfast cooking.
Beartooth handed Pearly a cup of coffee.
You drinking it, Beaver?
Smoke finished his coffee and walked over to Joker. He took several pair of moccasins out of his saddlebags and threw them over to Cal and Pearly.
Here, put these on.
Moccasins?
Yes. We're going to be going right up to the outlaw camp. I don't want any spurs or sounds of leather on wood or stone to alert them of our presence.
Smoke took one of the tins of boot black out of his saddlebag and smeared some on his face before passing the tin to the boys.
Well, how about Beartooth? Doesn't he need some of this?
No. That beard of his is black enough to keep his face hidden in the dark.
What's the plan, Smoke? I mean, are we gonna show these dogs any mercy?
No quarter. No mercy. There'll be no prisoners taken by us this trip. These bastards have already escaped from one prison, and it cost a lot of good people their lives. I think we rely on my cult for all the justice these sons of bitches deserve.
Good. I never was one for telling a man to put his hands up.
If you can get us up on the cliffs overlooking the outlaws' camp, the first thing we'll have to do is take out any sentries they have posted.
Won't they hear the guns?
No, because we're not going to shoot them. Now, when you get to the camp, we're going to have to split up and each take a different side of the valley. In case things go to hell and there's a commotion, we'll each make our way back to this camp. So be sure to pay attention on the way up so you can find your way back down here in the dark.
What if one of us gets in trouble?
This is war, Cal. We're all on our own. We could all get killed rushing in to try and save another, and the outlaws would win.
So be careful and get the job done right the first time. Don't go getting soft-hearted and even think of giving the man you're after a break. Because thinking like that'll get you killed.
Now, after the sentries are all taken out, I'm going to pay the camp itself a little visit.
You're going down there alone? Why?
Because there's nothing that makes a man more nervous than waking up and finding his friend lying next to him with his throat cut and his scalp gone. Makes sleeping the next night awfully hard. And sleepy, tired men don't think or fight too well.
They left their horses behind and made their way up the mountain toward the outlaws' camp on foot to minimize any sound they might make. Smoke carried on his back a large burlap bag of surprises for the outlaws. The storm Beartooth had predicted began with a light snowfall, but thankfully, the wind stayed down and the temperature didn't drop too much.
This is good. New snowfall cushion our feet and keep the noise down.
Once they got to the top of the trail, Bear squatted and pointed across the mountainside.
The Valley of the Springs is right over there, past the clump of trees.
You make out any of the sentries?
Beartooth nodded, pointing again. A bright orange speck of light could be seen off to one side, where one of the sentries was smoking a cigarette. Beartooth shifted his weight and pointed off in another direction, where a dark figure could be seen outlined against the lighter darkness of the sky.
I'll take the one on the left, Pearly. You take the one on the right.
What about me?
You go with Beartooth and circle around to the other side of the valley. There'll probably be a couple more over there.
Walking on the soles of his feet in a low crouch, Smoke moved as silently as the wind toward the sentry, who had finished his cigarette and was leaning back against the bole of a tree, trying to stay out of the falling snow. Smoke slipped his knife out of its scabbard and eased up to the far side of the tree. Smoke caught him when he toppled and laid his dead body gently in the snow. After looking at it for a moment, he grinned as a thought occurred to him. He bent and quickly arranged the body so it was sitting with its back against the tree. He put the man's hat on his head and lowered the brim so it looked like he was sleeping.
Someone's gonna get a big surprise when they try to wake him up.
Pearly's job wasn't so easy. His man was standing out in the open with no nearby cover for Pearly to use in his approach. Pearly considered throwing his knife, but decided not to because if he didn't get a clean kill, the man might be able to shout a warning or get a shot off. Finally, an idea occurred to him. He searched until he found a fist-sized rock, and then he heaved it over the man's head. When it landed on the side of the sentry away from Pearly, the man grabbed his rifle and turned in that direction. Pearly dragged his body into the bushes and covered it with fallen tree limbs and snow. Then he made his way to the edge of the cliff overlooking the camp to see what was going to happen next. Beartooth and Cal found only one sentry on their side of the valley once Cal had pointed the man out. Beartooth nodded at Cal to go get him. Cal, surprised and delighted that the mountain man trusted him, pulled his skinning knife from its scabbard and moved quietly toward the man, who was bent over, building a cigarette. Beartooth walked up.
Why'd you let me do that?
Since the rheumatiz has hit my legs, my knees keep popping something fierce when I walk. I didn't want the sound to give us away.
Oh.
Beartooth squatted and pulled out a knife that was so long it was almost a machete, and he proceeded to scalp the dead man. The sight made Cal's stomach roll, so he turned away and looked down into the camp while the mountain man finished his grisly work. Smoke had no trouble following his sentry's tracks back down the trail leading to the camp in the valley. The outlaw's campfire had burned itself down to just coals, so there was very little light to give him away as he scurried across the open space toward the cabins. All of the outlaws were sleeping in the cabins, and none were outside where Smoke could get to them. He stood there for a moment, undecided if he should take the chance of going into one of the cabins, when his eyes fell on several empty whiskey bottles lying next to the fire. He smiled to himself, knowing that if they'd been drinking that much, sooner or later one would have to come outside to relieve himself. He walked to the back of one of the cabins and found what he was looking for, a small outhouse 20 yards from the cabin. He stepped behind it and settled down to wait. 15 minutes later, the door to the cabin opened, and a man stumbled toward the outhouse. Smoke waited until the man was just about to enter. Then he stepped around and plunged the knife in his heart. Then Smoke made a quick slice around the man's skull and yanked his scalp off, leaving his bloody skull bone exposed. Once that was done, Smoke took a bundle of 4 sticks of dynamite he'd tied together and walked back to the fire. Brushing aside the snow a few feet away, he buried the dynamite, leaving a 4-foot length of fuse. He put the end of the fuse near a half-burned-out log on the fire and covered it with snow mixed with mud. When the outlaws built up the fire the next morning, they were going to be in for one big surprise. Smoke then walked to where the outlaws' horses were grouped in a makeshift corral in the corner of the valley. He opened the gate so they'd wander off during the night. Now, he knew some would stay put, but the others would walk off in search of grass to graze on, leaving many of the outlaws afoot. Figuring he'd done enough for one night, he climbed back up the trail and headed back to their camp. Once they'd all made it back to their camp, Smoke spoke to the men.
We got time for about 3 hours of sleep. Then we need to be on the cliffs overlooking the camp when they wake up.
Just before dawn, Beartooth filled 8 canteens with fresh coffee and handed 2 to each of the men.
You're gonna need this cafecito to keep you alert. Figures to be a long day.
Smoke handed each of the men a sack filled with bundles of dynamite sticks with short fuses. He then handed each one a cigar.
Light these when you see the outlaw stirring. Use them for the fuses, but be careful. We've only got about 15 seconds after the fuse is lit before it goes off.
Try for the cabins first. That way they won't have no cover to hide behind once the shooting starts.
And remember, you'll be shooting downhill, so aim a little low. Otherwise, you'll overshoot your target. Bear, you take Pearly with you. I'll take Cal with me. That way, we'll have him surrounded.
Smoke, make sure you tell Cal to keep his damn head down. Getting tired of picking lead out of his carcass.
You do the same, Pearly.
I'd hate to have to eat all those bear sign Miss Sally makes by myself. I'd get as big as a horse.
I'll say one thing about these young beavers of yours, Smoke. They don't scare easy.
They've been to the river and back a few times, Bear. They'll handle themselves all right. Take my word for it.
Ozark Jack Berlin came out of his cabin and stretched, checking the sky to see what the weather was going to be. The storm of the night before had passed, and the sky was orange and purple with the first light of day.
Good. No snow.
Berlin walked over to the fire, which was down to a few smoldering coals. He threw some fresh wood on the fire, placed a pot of coffee next to him, and walked toward the outhouse. As he walked, he glanced up at the cliffs overlooking the valley, wondering where the sentries were. They usually were the first in line for coffee after a night standing guard.
The lazy bastard's probably sleeping.
Berlin opened the door to the outhouse.
God damn!
He saw the bloody mess of one of his men sitting on the board over the crap pit. He whirled, reaching for his pistol, realizing something was terribly wrong. As he ran toward his cabin, he looked to the side and saw only three horses standing near the open corral gate. The others were all gone.
Son of a bitch!
Within minutes, the cabin doors opened and men boiled out into the early morning sun, some still in long underwear with their pants around their knees as they tried to get dressed on the run.
What the hell's going on?
Just as Berlin got next to the now roaring fire, he saw a trail of fire burning away from the coals toward the snow.
What the hell? Hit the dirt!
Billy Bartlett, who was nearest to the fire, was blown 15 feet into the air, a piece of burning pine log protruding from his chest and his face blown off down to the bone. Jack McGraw's left arm was shredded by wooden splinters, spinning him around and throwing him against the cabin wall. After the explosion, the real fun began. Wiley Gottlieb was knocked to his knees, a hole the size of a bucket in his chest from front to back. Beartooth's big 50 sounded, and Jesus Santiago's right leg was blown completely off just above the knee. Berlin rolled to the side just as the snow where he had been was pocked by several shots from Cal's Winchester. Berlin scrambled to his feet. Tony Cassidy ran in a low crouch toward one of the horses near the corral. Pearlie calmly aimed. The rest of the men ran back into the cabins trying to get under cover, except for Blue Owl. He saw Berlin heading for the caves, and he followed as fast as he could, running almost bent double to make a smaller target. Smoke stood up where Bear and Pearlie could see him and held a bundle of dynamite up for a second. Then he lit it from his cigar and made a long toss toward one of the cabins. Cal followed suit, as did Beartooth and Pearl. In just a short amount of time, Berlin's gang of savages was reduced to two scared men running for their lives. Smoke, who'd seen Berlin and Blue Owl disappearing to the cave, put down his sharps and scrambled down the path on the side of the cliff to follow him. Smoke entered the cave, crouching to make a smaller target, and he walked forward, his Colt in his hand, to see if he could find the two men who'd entered moments before. Beartooth, Cal, and Pearlie made their way down the cliffs until they were on the valley floor. Dead men and pieces of dead men were scattered all over the area. The three men moved among the bodies, checking them out to make sure they'd cause no more trouble. Beartooth searched the rubble of the cabins, finding the large sack of gold nuggets and dust.
Hey boys, looky here!
Suddenly, from behind him, the remains of a wooden table moved and a huge black man stood up, a pistol in his hand aimed at Beartooth's back. In an instant, Cal and Pearlie drew.
Damn if you young beavers didn't save old Beartooth's hide. Thank you kindly, boys.
Say, where's Smoke?
Well, last I saw, he was headed in that cave over yonder after two of them outlaws.
Cal and Pearlie ran toward the cave as fast as they could, hoping they wouldn't be too late. Beartooth followed at a slower rate.
Don't worry none about Smoke, boys. A mountain man like Smoke Jensen, more than a match for just two pond scum like them fellers.
Smoke made his way cautiously through the cave, finally seeing a square of light ahead in the darkness. Slowly, carefully, he squeezed out of the opening and got to his feet. 20 yards away, he saw Ozark Jack Berlin and Blue Owl getting their supplies together and getting ready to get on two horses they had tied to a tree. Smoke stepped out into the open, his right hand near the butt of his Colt 45 Peacemaker on his right hip.
You boys thinking of leaving this little party?
The two men whirled around, their eyes wide with surprise. Berlin smiled slowly and turned to square off facing Smoke.
You must be the famous Smoke Jensen I've been hearing so much about.
One and the same.
You as fast with that six killer as they say you are?
You're about to find out, Mr. Berlin.
Berlin's hand moved and he slapped the butt of his gun. But to Smoke, it seemed as if Berlin moved in slow motion. Smoke's bullet took Ozark Jack Berlin in the middle of his forehead. Blue Owl jumped to the side and raised his hands.
I don't have a gun, Jensen. You'll have to arrest me and take me to jail.
I'm not an officer of the law, and you're not going anywhere.
But, you wouldn't shoot an unarmed man, would you?
Just then, Cal, Pearly, and Beartooth crawled out of the cave behind Smoke. Smoke nodded at the knife in Blue Owl's belt.
That's the knife you used on those women.
Yeah, it is. You want a taste of my blade, White Eyes?
I think it only fitting you die the way you killed so many others, Breed.
I'm not a Breed. I'm full-blooded MODOK.
Smoke unbuckled his belt and let his guns fall to the ground, pulling out his bowie knife in the same motion.
Then you know what I'm gonna do to you, Indian? I'm gonna kill you. Then I'm gonna cut your eyes out, so you'll wander the afterlife blind for all eternity.
We'll see, Jensen. We'll see. Smoke!
Hush, boy. Watch and learn.
The two men circled each other warily, Blue Owl occasionally sweeping his knife before him to keep Smoke away as he looked for an opening. Suddenly, he jumped forward, slashing viciously in a wide arc. Smoke didn't retreat as the Indian thought he would, but merely leaned back, letting the point of the attacker's knife graze his chest. While Blue Owl was off balance and leaning forward, Smoke's knife moved so fast it was a blur, back and forth across Blue Owl's face, laying both his cheeks open to the bone.
Yeah, I've had enough. You win.
No. It won't be over until one of us is dead. Like all those women you killed.
Bastard!
Blue Owl lunged forward, his knife outstretched. Smoke leaned to the side and let the knife pass harmlessly by his face, bringing his own blade up with all his strength. The blade impeded Blue Owl just below his belly button. Smoke stepped back, let the Indian sink to his knees, his bowels flopping out of the long hole in his abdomen to writhe like purple snakes on the ground in front of Blue Owl. As the Indian sat there, helpless, Smoke stepped forward and, with a quick double slash, took his eyes. Smoke turned his back and walked away.
Aren't you gonna finish him off, Smoke?
Let's go home, boys. Let him suffer for a while, like all the women he cut up did. With any luck, he'll last a couple of days before the wolves find him.
Beartooth put his arms around Cal and Pearly's shoulders as they turned to go.
Let that be a lesson to you boys. Don't never make a mountain man mad.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man number 27, Valor of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2000, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by James Lewis, Andy Clements, Christopher Sheeran, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, Thomas Penny, Christopher Graybill, Elizabeth Jernigan, Ken Jackson, Michael Glenn, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Scott McCormick, James Konacek, Drew Copas, Tim Getman, Michael John Casey, Tim Carlin, and Nanette Savard. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and the Smoke Jensen theme music by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed Valor of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Bloodbond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts.
Graphic Audio presents Vampire Earth.
Val, you're free to ask Peter here whatever you like. We don't know much about this. We're holding nothing back.
You think I'm on an assignment?
We know you work with cover stories and so on.
No, it's what I told you. I'm inquiring for a friend, a fellow officer, William Post. This isn't prep for an operation, not by a long shot.
It's just that the mule list is a bit of a mystery to us, too. We thought that maybe someone was finally looking into it.
Mule list?
Mule list is a term we use because all these women appear to carry something the Kurians are interested in. We know it's not blood type or anything obvious, like Downs. About all we know is that only women are tested and that if they come up positive for it, they're immediately packed up and shipped off.
Okay, Jackson, I give up. You win. What do you want? What did I ever do to you?
No, this is purely professional. I need to know about a certain train.
I deal with dozens of trains a week, man. How am I supposed to...
Listen to the question. A train. A special train. Not deposits. All women on board, routed through Memphis. Some sort of medical test selected them. Maybe joining with similar trains?
I don't know anything about a train like that. Let me go, and I'll find out for you.
Looks like you girls are gonna get to watch after all. Bring it in, Smokey.
What's that?
A big bull grog rooster. You better dig deep in your memory before our bully boy gets deep into you, rooster.
You can't mean... Oh, no.
He thinks you're a female in estrus, rooster.
Holy shit, that's big. Pimp, my forearm's got nothing on this grog.
Stop him!
You're a hard guy to find, Valentine.
Sir, please turn around and put your hands behind you.
What's this about?
You're under arrest for murder.
Murder?
Sorry, Major. Orders.
David, what's going on?
It's gotta be a mistake. Nice scouting.
Hope they don't climb up there.
Plan or nothing. Never been in here to scavenge. I'd be shocked if there wasn't a hole in the roof at most of these places. Valentine, help me hold this. No, the plastic can. They're trying to crawl over. Girl, check the back. There might be a door. Oh, shit.
There's a door, or there isn't. That's the problem.
How many?
How many are there?
Thousands!
Sounds about right.
Vampire Earth, Book 5, Valentine's Exile.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.